They call him Flipper, Flipper, faster than lightning. No one you see is smarter than he. And we know Flipper lives in a world full of wonder, flying there under, under the sea.
Hey, welcome back to Catch It, Cook It, and Eat It. I'm your host, Ben Sargent, and I'm excited to have a good friend of mine today on the show by the name of Deep Sea John. John, are you there?
I'm here.
All right. John, you have rightfully earned the name Deep Sea John, as you used to be an abalone diver, right? And you did, is it free diving that you were doing back in the day?
No, we used surface air.
Okay. And you were a commercial abalone diver, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. John and I had an interview way back when, and you had a lovely cat, and the cat was sitting on your lap, and you were telling me unbelievable tales. This is in Newport, Oregon, where my sister lives, about abalone diving, surfing, and you name it, shark hunting and all kinds of stuff. Are you not diving anymore for abalone?
No, I had a stroke when I was working on a boat about 4 years ago.
Okay. Tell our New York audience what exactly abalone is, because a lot of us don't know.
Well, abalone is a univalve. Some people like to call them clams. Not a clam, has two sides, but abalone is a shellfish that has one shell, mm-hmm. and then has a meat inside the shell.
And why are they so rare?
Well, they're not particularly rare. Mm-hmm. They need clean water and a lot of kelp. That's what they eat, is kelp and algae and stuff like that. But there's a lot of them, but the problem is that they get such high prices for them that we've kind of wiped them out in certain areas.
Okay, and so you're not allowed to dive for them the way you were. Is that right?
Well, no, there's not even a commercial abalone permit in the United States now.
Wow, okay. And you used to go down and pry them off the rocks, is that right? With like a crowbar?
Yeah. Well, not exactly a crowbar, but kind of like that.
Something like that. And you've lived all over the world, isn't that right, John?
You know, from time to time, I guess you might say that.
Right. And I know one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show is because there was this, you know, death that just occurred recently at SeaWorld, and I know that you have a past that you have spoken of at times and at other times have not wanted to, and I know it's sort of a a touchy subject, but I think you're a good spokesperson in terms of sort of what's happening, and you surely have an insider's view on it, but this woman was basically taken under accidentally at SeaWorld by an orca whale. And before you were an abalone diver, you sort of were called into this task. Is that right?
After.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And can you walk us through it? I know you were kind of a young guy at the time, but what happened exactly?
Well, I worked for the Seattle Aquarium, Ted Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
And Ted Griffin had just bought Namu, mm-hmm. from the Canadian fishermen, and before that, everybody was scared to death of orcas, and in fact, you get a trophy if you killed one up here in the Northwest because they ate so many salmon, but he kind of secretly had him netted in a cove up in the Puget Sound, and swam with him every day and became friends and rode him and an unheard of things, right, for that day.
Right.
Then, and he had the Seattle Aquarium. We went out to trap some,
mm-hmm.
and sell to other aquariums.
Okay.
And then that's where I came in, and that's what we did.
And you were kind of just a young guy, as I remember, and it was like you had, you know, a wife and I think kids at that time, and you were supporting a family, and they said, we need you to go out and trap a whale. Is that right?
Well, not just me. I just worked right. for, I mean, you know, I just worked for daily wage, really. Uh-huh. And but, yeah, I had a family, and I was going to college, and I was about 30.
Okay.
And that sounds awful young to me now. Anyway, then some illegal things were done that by me and a couple of other guys that we didn't realize was illegal. We thought we were just preventing bad PR, but not being a red-hot businessman, I didn't realize the implications of it. Mm. And so anyway, the three of us that were involved in that and the physical part of it, we didn't hunt whales anymore after that.
Mm. And there was some backlash, right, from the colleges?
Oh, lots of backlash.
Right.
In fact, the three of us and turned state evidence against the company, and that was in 1976. And SeaWorld, by that time, had bought the Seattle Aquarium, I think, and then they were up here in Puget Sound. And when we were doing the whales, there were only about 10 protesters.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in 69. And by 76, the whales came into Admiralty in the Butt Inlet up by Olympia. That's also where the Evergreen College is, which is a very
hippie college.
Yeah. And there are about 5,000-10,000
uh-huh.
protesters. And that's when I turned state to evidence at that time.
So there was an actual lawsuit against, was it, who was, what role were you playing there? Did you have to come and testify, is that right?
No, I just went to the state attorney general's office and gave him my testimony, and that was it.
I see. And what was the thing that was illegal? What was the...
Well, I understand it. Well, you get a permit, the Fish and Wildlife, which I wasn't involved in at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, like, you have a permit for six whales or nine or whatever. Let's say six.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them died right off the bat, and it was discovered by somebody that worked for the Everett Herald.
Mm-hmm.
And that picture came out in color on the newspaper. And so we're already off to a bad start.
Right.
And then about 12 o'clock one night, and the guys that, like Ted Griffin, they work very hard to keep the whale safe.
Sure.
We have guards in at night, all night, and
mm-hmm.
everything. But so sometimes you know what happens. And
right.
Anyway, they came and got us at about midnight or something like that, and it was a little late at night, and we didn't know what was going on. We got on our wetsuits and went out, and with three small whales had got tangled in a net and drowned.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had us cut them open and fill them with rocks and put anchors on the tails and sink them.
As a cover-up.
Well, yeah. You know, they don't want it. We thought it was just to avoid PR.
Uh-huh.
I didn't even give it a thought how much the things cost, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been okay. They could have done that. It would have been fine. That they'd have had to admit that to and add it onto their permit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just that many they wouldn't be able to get. That's what they didn't do.
So every permit goes to a whale specifically. So if you lose a whale, you would lose the permit if you didn't somehow.
Well, you'd lose the amount of whale, that figure.
I see. And do you know how much they get for them?
No, I don't.
No.
And I know now it's a lot.
Right. And I'm curious as to at what point you sort of went from, you know, the fisherman who doesn't ask questions to a guy who sort of regretted what you had done. Was there a moment when you were like, oh,
about
man.
2 days later.
Yeah.
We caught Lolita, the whale that did this. It's the only whale that has been caught. Mm-hmm. It's still alive, and she's at the Miami Sea Aquarium.
Okay.
And while we were loading her on the truck, they're trussed up to a small boat, and it's towed over to the shallower water where a cherry picker can come out of a crane and lift it up into a, get a sling underneath it, a regular fish stretcher, mm-hmm. and then that's picked up, put in the back of a truck on wet mattresses and stuff is how we did it then. They'd probably have a more high-tech way to do it now. I don't know, because they don't do it here, but they do it in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And then you release all the rest of the whales that you have in captivity, which are considerable, maybe 20, 25.
Right.
And they all just came over to the beach where we were, like not more than 25, 35 yards away, and just kind of hung out there and communicated back and forth. And while I and another guy were in the water with the orca getting it in the stretcher, you know, we could hear this communication going back and forth, back and forth.
Mm.
And it was, you know, to me, it was heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
And so that was the last, that was when that whale was just gone, I was gone.
Right. Are the whale now at SeaWorld, I thank you actually for, I know it's not easy for you to recount that, but do you have a... Is there a line of lineage, of heritage between the whale that's at SeaWorld now and any of those first whales?
No.
No. Totally, totally different whale.
I would
imagine you have thoughts on what happened at SeaWorld. Am I right? It's just a gander.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
It's it's not hard to figure it out.
Sure.
You know, it's animals in a spot it's not supposed to be in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
It's a large, large, dangerous, wild creature.
Right.
And it's like what happened in Las Vegas with the tigers and the guy.
Yeah.
You know?
If you put your head in a tiger's mouth,
yeah,
you're kind of asking for trouble.
Uh-huh. And I have pet orcas, large bulls, and have pictures of it.
Sure.
When they're totally wild, but just been captured in like a corral, and rub their heads and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But I would never get in the water with it.
Right.
I mean, I did, but I didn't see them.
Yeah.
You know, that was part of my job, but I wouldn't just say, okay, I'm going to get in and see if I can swim with this. No, that's not what I want to do.
Sure. There's a reason there. They're called killer whales. I mean, they didn't get that name out of nowhere.
Well, they got the name because of the sea lions that they kill and stuff like that. But and I've been in the ocean with them and just happened to run into them, like off Laguna Beach. I ran into a pod one time. There was about four or five of them, and they just went by and didn't pay us any attention. But
you think they can tell the difference between a human and a sea lion? Yeah,
definitely.
Uh huh. And what do you think happened there? Was it an accident on the whale's part? I mean, it's not purposely trying to drown its trainer, is it?
No. It's just, you know, who knows? I mean, I don't know what the psychological effect is on a whale that size and in a little pond of water, but it wouldn't be good on me.
Right, right.
You know, or anybody else.
Right.
I went to SeaWorld... lots of years ago now, when Shaman was still alive, and was there, and we went to the whale show, but as soon as the whale came out, I had to leave. I didn't want to watch that.
Couldn't watch it. Yeah. John, I'm going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and I want to talk to you just a little bit more about, you know, regulations and things on, you know, fisheries and all this stuff that I deal with on a regular basis on the show, but I think you deal with firsthandedly in terms of your fishing and your profession. So give us 2 minutes, and we'll come right back, and we're going to chat more with Deep Sea John.
Baby beluga in the deep blue sea, swim so wild and you swim so free. Heaven above and the sea below, and a little white whale on the go. Baby beluga, is the water warm? Is your mama home with you so happy? Way down yonder where the dolphins play, where you dive and splash all day. Waves rolling and the waves roll out, see the water squirting out of your spout. Baby beluga, oh baby beluga, sing your little song, sing for all your friends we love.
Hey John, we're back. Catch it, cook it, and eat it. I just wanted to ask you, you know, I have an aunt who, she's in the Turks and Caicos, and she has this dolphin that I swore this was a myth, but, you know, she asked me to come down there and bring my video camera, and she said that this particular dolphin had befriended her, and that unlike its relationship with anyone else, it's actually not the most friendly dolphin, but for some reason with my aunt, it just, you know, loves her, and she has this little scooter that drives her through the ocean, you know, so she can kind of speed along, and she'll spend days at end looking for the dolphin. Jojo is its name, and when she spots him, you can spot him because he has a lot of marks on his back and on his dorsal fin. She plunges in the water, and she'll swim with him for hours at end. I just find this amazing. What explains this about these creatures that they like one person and not another?
I don't think you can explain it. When I was diving abalone, there was a diver named Perry Mart,
mm-hmm.
who was one of the old time very good abalone divers. And at those years, that there was a lot more big black sea bass. Mm-hmm. I mean, not the kind that get up 600 pounds.
Wow,
they're bigger. And a big black sea bass would come and mess with him very often, and nudge him, and he could scratch it just like the with his abalone iron on the side.
Yeah.
But nobody else could even get close to it. Never went to anybody. I mean, who knows what wild creatures? We don't have any idea what goes on, I don't think.
Right. Amazing. You know, the situation with my aunt is she's a horse trainer, so she has a lot of experience with animals. And she says in all the years that she's been swimming with Jojo, which, as far as I know, is a wild dolphin. I mean, there's debate, you know, whether it was at one point in captivity or not. But in all the years swimming with him, she's never reached out and grabbed his dorsal fin or, you know, tried to take a ride or tried to scratch him or anything. And a lot of people think that it was sort of building up trust with him and that he doesn't particularly like to be touched. So he knows that she won't reach out and startle him, I guess. But it's an amazing story. I didn't believe her, and I went down there, and for like 5 days we followed this dolphin and watched her play with him. It was amazing.
Well, you're at one in a million, you know. That's the way that people should react with animals, you know, and mm-hmm. don't make them pets and don't have to teach them tricks and mm-hmm. don't have to keep them caged and stuff like that. If they want right. you, you know, if they want you, they'll come, and if they don't, they won't. And if they do, they might eat you.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Did you happen to see the Cove, the documentary about Richard O'Berry and the sort of this slaughter of dolphins that takes place in Japan?
I didn't, but I know about it.
I mean, it's very interesting to me that, in you know, this guy was a trainer as well for many years, and also now is probably one of the largest advocates of, you know, dolphin freedom, and regrets hugely what he did in the world of, you know, bringing dolphins into captivity. But I guess my question to you is then, how do you educate people about these amazing animals if they can't get up close and see them?
Well, you know, we know they're there. Mm-hmm. What do we want to educate them about? I mean, mm-hmm. they're there, and you know, we can go out and see them in the wild if you want to bad enough. Mm-hmm. Which isn't good for them either.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we need to know about every little thing that comes along, you know?
Whether they can jump through a hoop or not.
Yeah. O'Berry?
Yeah.
You know, he's... I think it's the one, I know who it is, and he has it right on, you know? And not only does he regret the capture and everything, but also the incarceration of the orcas
mm-hmm.
now, and
right.
that's the reason. Because you don't know what their middle, what's going on. You know it got to be harmful to them.
Sure. And in this case of this Tulikum whale, we're talking about a 12,000-pound animal, I guess. And it was the third time, apparently, in 20 years that he had killed a trainer. It's not like this was like a once-off. This is like an angry whale that, in my opinion, is pissed off and wants to be put back in the water, or is just like, you know, a pit bull. He just plays too hard.
Well, either way.
Right.
You know, he shouldn't be there.
Right.
And the first time that he showed signs.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody was lucky enough to escape the to get by the first one,
right?
You know, I would think that a company would be smart enough to either get rid of it or, you know, cancel that type of show. Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine them going ahead. You know, it's a billion-dollar business, so.
Right. They're right back at it. They've started up. They started, I think, a week and a half ago.
That didn't surprise me.
Right.
Oh, I don't drink Budweiser anymore, and I don't go to shows like that either.
I hear you. And you know, the worst part of it is that the only thing that they changed is they now say that they won't let their VIP customers come down and pet the whale. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
That's right. I had heard that.
That's the latest.
But the common folk, they don't
uh-huh.
care.
Oh, yeah, they don't mind.
It's that fine. Sounds right.
So, and John, what just because this is my catch it, cook it, and eat it show, and I did a segment last time about whale meat. We're definitely not going to talk about whale meat on this show, but I did want to ask you what your thoughts are in terms of whale hunting in regards to tribes, because the people that I covered last week, or 2 weeks ago, they have, you know, special permission to go out and kill a certain number of whales because they rely on the meat, this Inuit tribe, and without the meat, the community was actually having all kinds of health problems, and so now they've sort of lifted the moratorium on whale hunting just for them. What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, I think that's the way it should be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's their way of life, you know, and that's what they eat, and I don't see anything the matter with that.
Mm-hmm. Right. What's your day to day now that you're not out catching whales and you're not out diving for abalone hundreds of feet down? I mean, you were quite a risk taker back in your day. What have you slowed down a little? Hopefully.
Well, what's left of me has. I try to get to Hawaii as often as I can, the warm water.
Yeah.
And I snorkel there. I have a friend. In fact, I'm sending out a shipment of, you know, the shirts to him right now. And he runs a dive business over there, and he takes me out snorkeling with the regular snorkel trips and okay. diving trips. But I just snorkel. And
no more surfing for you?
No, but I'm still collecting boards.
Are you really? What do you have?
I got a Mickey Munoz, I got a Gordon Smith, and got two Enviro, a new guy that's doing it, and Ole Avelzi, and a couple of Ocean Pulses.
I want the GNS. I'll take the Gordon Smith.
Yeah, I guess you would, wouldn't you?
I love them.
It's about a 10.5-11 foot semi-gun.
Oh, those are the best. Those are the best. You know, sometimes you're not going to believe this, but here in New York, we actually get waves big enough for taking a gun out. I just got some guy to shape me an 8-foot gun. He thought I was joking. I put in the order, and he didn't make it because he thought someone was messing with him. But
really?
So, yeah. And then in the town of Newport, it's a real active fishing community. Are you involved in the fishing per se?
Well, I go down to a marine supply store every day for mm-hmm. coffee and lies.
I've been there, and I would say, yeah, it's about 50% lies for sure.
And we have a grand old time and go over all the rules and the regulations and the new ones and the old ones and so sure. on.
What's the latest for, you know, crabs in that area and stuff? I'm sure they're constantly griping about, you know, how tight it is. Is it pretty tough up there right now?
Well, the crabbing hasn't changed much. It's one of the few things that hasn't.
Really?
Yeah, it's still the same size and same limits that you can take. But just about everything else has changed considerably.
Right, right. what is the sort of most changed fish that out there that...
The redfish.
The redfish, yeah.
Yeah, all the redfish, canaries and yellow eyes and vermilions and the reef fish, the rock fish.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's a moratorium on them. But, you know, when we were catching them a long time ago, we didn't know that they lived 135 years.
Wow.
You know, and they don't even get mature until they're like 30 years old to reproduce. So,
right.
You know, we caught them, just caught the heck out of them because there were so many.
Right.
But now they're not.
And you do a fair amount of pickling and I mean, you have ways of preserving your fish. I remember when I met you, you had, actually, this was funny, you had some pickled, I think it was pickled salmon, but you took it out of the fridge, and I took a bite, and it was one of the most amazing things that I had ever tasted, and you followed that up by saying that it had been pickled by a friend of yours who had just passed away a few days ago, and I'm sorry to bring up the story, but I kind of gulped at that moment, because I was wondering if it was poisoned by...
Ted Johnson, he certainly belonged to the Liars Club.
He was... I was just afraid I had eaten the wrong salmon, you know?
Oh, no, it's just one of my favorite things.
It was... And do you do the pickling as well?
No. His wife actually did most of it. He did quite a bit of it. She lives part of the year here and part of the year in Arizona. We see her occasionally. Mm. Love her to death.
Good.
Corky Johnson.
Corky Johnson. And how's your wife doing, John?
She's doing good.
Good.
Meaner than a snake, but she's doing really good.
She didn't seem too mean when I hung out with her. Well, I have to say, visiting you is one of the most unbelievable experiences. It's like going into a little shanty town, little shanty village. There's buoys all over the place, knickknacks. Like, it is really out of a movie. And when the wind's whipping off of that point there, it's just like nothing else. And I guess people can visit you if they want, right? You're doing rentals on your little little bungalows out there?
Yeah, we've got three little rentals, but mm-hmm. you know, we're getting up there in years, and my wife being a good German, some people think she's related to Rommel, and everything has to be German perfect, so right. she won't let anybody else do the cleaning.
I see. See, she so does it all. Yeah.
We rid them for one night, and she cleans for 4 days. So we've kept that back, and we're starting to rent by the month again, but we still have a couple of places that we do by the night.
Right. Boy, I don't know whether to feel sorry for you, or maybe it's the best thing in the world. You must have a clean house.
I'm talking about the rentals.
All right. Okay, so yours is not as clean. she doesn't clean your house.
She does. You're going to get me in trouble here.
Yeah, you're in trouble now, John. You better run. All right, well, I gotta wrap up. You just heard it here. That was Deep Sea John from Newport, Oregon. Thank you so much for talking to us. That was really
before
really
you leave,
yeah.
When you see your aunt,
yes.
Just tell her hello for me, and I have the highest respect for somebody that operates like she does. I just can't tell you.
I will. I absolutely will.
Okay.
Thank you, John.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Bye.
It's a summertime affair, Shaggy.